Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
G'day, you're listening to Friends with Money, your weekly podcast on how you can save and build your wealth. My name is Michelle Baltazar, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Money. Thank you for joining us. Now, with us today is a very special guest. She has just launched her book. She probably doesn't need any introductions from any of you who listen to her flagship podcast, which is the Broke Generation podcast. I know that in the past, we really talk about investing in property and shares, but how can you even get started in investing if you don't know how to spend wisely, if you like, or stop spending recklessly? So we have today the founder of The Broke Generation. She's a financial educator and now the author of a new book called Good With Money, Reprogram Your Spending Habits and Take Control of Your Money. Thank you, Emma. Miss Emma Edwards, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited too. I was reading your book and I can totally see myself in a lot of the things that you talk about, where you talk about financial awareness, you talk about financial sabotage. And I think by the end of this podcast, by the end of this episode, we want to tell our listeners, what are the three things you can do right now to improve your spending habits or even to stop self-sabotaging? Because I just feel like we've become experts at just being super judgmental on ourselves. So I'm just going to ask, what was the reason why you thought it would be great to write this book?
I wrote this book, I sort of see this as my contribution to the financial conversation. You know, in the last probably 5 to 7 years, if that, money started to re-enter the mainstream. When I first started The Broke Generation and I started posting content on social media, my thought with that was to, you know, we are as a generation, as a, you know, I'm a millennial through and through, and Gen Z and onwards. We as the younger generation are consuming a lot of information through social media. And at that time, it was sort of, we might follow beauty vloggers, or we might learn how to do a winged eyeliner, or we learned how to dress and style ourselves. And I thought, I wonder if that sort of more hardline education, I suppose, those like drier topics could enter that sort of cultural zeitgeist and be much more fun and make it like cool to manage your money. So I was going through, at that time, I was going through my own sort of financial awakening. I'd never been good with money. Mm-hmm. And I thought that there was a reason, I thought there was a need to have a voice to people that also don't feel like they're good with money, to teach that education and engage them in that way, because a lot of financial education comes from people that are naturally very good with money. So the book was really an extension of that sort of vision and purpose, and to contribute to the library of financial books that exist out there now and offer sort of my contribution in that sort of behavioral, habitual, belief-based space. I spent a year studying financial psychology, which is a really emerging field in America at the moment. So I studied online with the university over there. And that sort of gave me a really richer, much richer understanding of the why behind our financial behavior. And that really connected with a lot of the things that I guess I'd been cultivating in my own life and in my content and with people that I work with.
In fact, when you started the Broke Generation platform, if you like, back in 2018, definitely I was one of those people who was checking out all the makeup vlogs. Rihanna was massive, for example. So yes, let's look at her range. But there was nothing that was fun around finance. I mean, I'm sure you and I were watching all these videos of just really dry kind of presentations. Mm-hmm. So now, again, this idea of financial awareness or financial psychology, so that is an emerging field. Now, what are the things that you kind of discovered about yourself as you started understanding that financial psychology is a big component of building your success, your financial success?
The thing with, I guess, financial awareness and financial psychology is understanding your own behavior and why you might do the things that you do, because that's what's going to make it easier to change that behavior if you need to, or to optimize it for the outcomes that you want. So kind of the key principles of financial psychology as a field is that you have a set of financial beliefs and they inform your financial behavior. You index differently on certain money scripts based on the way that you've experienced money throughout your life. So when I was starting to, you know, coming from being a bit of a hot mess money-wise, I was starting to unpack where my money was going, why I didn't have savings, the, I guess, perspective and understanding gap in why that was the case. And I started to kind of uncover reasons behind my financial challenges that were much more based in that belief and perspective foundation. And that was what was informing my behavior. And I think particularly when it comes, this is, you know, another primary reason for writing the book, when it comes down to changing your money and changing your spending habits, there's so much shame. And there's a unique kind of shame that exists for something that people tell you you're meant to know how to do. Like, we're meant to just come out of the womb and know how to be good with money. And particularly when you look at the modern world that we now live in that has completely escalated in the last sort of 20 years, looking back, even, you know, I'm in my 30s, so I remember a time where people would discussing whether or not they would ever use the internet to buy things. I remember thinking, what, people genuinely saying, why would you ever want to do that?
So give me an example. I know that you have plenty of examples in your book where there are triggers. If you spend $200, you get free shipping. If you don't, you have to spend an extra $4 or $5. So give us an example on how someone can be more effective when they're in that kind of environment of online shopping where you're just being really kind of encouraged to spend a lot.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, you know, that sort of stuff I was mentioning before about the way you've experienced money and that informing your behavior, that's now collided with all of this external messaging. There's just so much stuff. There's expert marketing tactics. There is technology that means that advertising will literally follow you around the internet until you give in. So for me, in that realm, it's all about slowing down your decision making. First of all, noticing when you're making decisions. You know, it's estimated we make hundreds of thousands of decisions a day, but reduce that down to money decisions. How often are you going from being completely unaware that something exists to owning that product? That process has been so streamlined thanks to social media, thanks to you know, digital checkouts and Apple Pay and having your card details saved. You can scroll on the couch and add something to your cart that you did not even know existed 5 seconds ago, and you can own it within 5 seconds. So it's all about slowing down that process, noticing when you're just doing something by default, and when might you be making decisions based on everything but your values and your financial situation.
That is me. So I'll go on a skincare platform to buy one or two things, and before you know it, I've got like this package that I needed to buy, and I'm like, what just happened there? I've got now like $300 to pay.
We almost sort of go hunting. We consume very differently. We go hunting for things to want and allow that desire. You know, an environment has been created where the desire will escalate very, very quickly. And the means to buy it is just right there. And if you don't, then, you know, there's always buy now, pay later, which is, you know, pushing us through the purchase funnel even faster.
So what's your view about buy now, pay later? Do you use it, or how can you use it and still be disciplined?
Yeah, buy now, pay later is a really interesting one. I used it originally when it first came out, and I thought this is a really great budgeting tool, really. You know, in my mind, I was thinking, well, it allows you to, if you need to buy, you know, new shoes for your child for school, and, you know, it's been a challenging month otherwise financially, you can build it into your budget, but you can get that thing now. But at this time, when I was originally using it and I had that view on it, there was only one major provider. There were a few sort of fringe ones, but there was one major provider that people will probably remember. But now my opinion of it has changed because of the way that it is marketed for use. I think the marketing around it as a product, as a financial vehicle, I think it could have great use cases in that case where you're buying things that you need and you're able to sort of reverse lay by them, I suppose, and build that into your budget retrospectively. But for me, it's gone a little bit too far in terms of the affiliation with consumer goods and the way that the messaging kind of messes with our brains a little bit. You know, you'll be on a clothing website or a tech website and see something that's $400. But the messaging you're seeing is, or four payments of $100. And what your brain starts to do is it starts to make $400 decisions as though it's a $100 decision, because that future version of us that has to pay the next 100, the next 100, the next 100 in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks feels like a stranger to us at that time. So that deferred responsibility and instant gratification kind of is the perfect storm for less than helpful financial decisions. If we were all perfectly rational people, I would love buy now, pay later, but we're not. And that's why it causes a problem.
So that is really where the financial psychology, the study of that, allows us to understand that there is just all these things happening within an online shopping environment that really works against us. We'll come in with a budget of $50 and it doesn't work. Now, I've mentioned the B word, budget. Any thoughts on this? So how can someone really stick to their budget?
Sticking to your budget also comes back around to that psychological behavioral aspect. And in the way I approach it is the better you can get to know yourself, the more chance you will have of sticking to your budget. I see having a budget or a financial ecosystem, as I tend to refer to it, as more of an iterative process. Rather than finding the one that's going to work or setting one and either having a pass-fail, I either stuck to it or I didn't, I see it much more as a process of understanding what aspects of your life can you use to build around your budget or build your budget around that. So what are the things that you really want to keep in your budget? Where do you find it much easier to cut things out? Are there maybe different patterns of your life, particularly if you're maybe a casual worker or a shift worker or a student, or you may be working part-time after going back after starting a family or whatever. Sometimes there can be different sort of ebbs and flows of life, but we use this one same system all the time. So for some people that maybe find budgeting really monotonous, I talk to them about having sort of two versions of the budget, where one, they're much more frugal and much more lean, and they do a lot of their saving in those periods, maybe when they're, you know, working a back-to-back pattern of shifts, but then on their week off or their off week or even just varying modes of budgeting, we change that slightly and there's a bit more freedom to play around and not be so focused on it. I find that helps with people that sort of feel like it's a path that you can never turn back from. And it's this really restrictive process. It's all about making it work for you. And that's where it's much more behavioral than mathematical for me.
Love it. Behavioral more than mathematical. And we've covered budgeting a lot in previous episodes and even in our online articles. But I find that no one's really couched it in that way where you don't have just the one budget. You can have two or three options depending on what, you know, season you are in your life, if you like, or what you, whether it's the school term or it's holidays or you're just, you know, doing your day to day. So that's really good. And I've seen kind of a sneak preview of it in your book, and there's just plenty there to give you tips on that. So now I think we've run out of time, but I do want to make sure that we give our listeners your top three tips on how to stop financial sabotage and also how to improve your spending habits.
Yes. Okay. Number one is start thinking about why you're doing the things you're doing with money. Why are you buying that? Why are you pulling that out of your savings? Why maybe the promises that you keep breaking that you've made to yourself? Why do you keep saying I'm going to do X, Y, and Z and not doing it? What is going on there? Usually the things that you resist will tell you an important behavioral lesson. And our habits are the things that we do over and over again. So that's where you can see that things start to become default to the point that we almost don't even notice them. Second thing is coming back to that slowing down of the decision-making. Even if just for a day or 3 days in a row, you start noticing every time you're in a decision-making process, whether that is going past a shop window and thinking, oh, that's quite nice. You know, that's the decision-making process. The seed has been planted there. And you may be sort of like entering the purchase decision-making process there. Or when you are making a purchase, just noticing that you're doing that and how often that is happening. It's always eye-opening how many people kind of, when you look back on your transactions, you don't necessarily realize where your money's gone and you realize how on autopilot we are or how many things are baked into your routine. And on that note, the third thing is to get financially engaged. I think that on top of the financial literacy gap that we have a financial engagement gap, and that can start to solve for the financial literacy gap. So looking, even retrospectively, you don't have to track every dollar in real time, but looking at where your money has gone and noticing the sort of backstories behind that, you know, your transactions tell a very rich story about your habits, your routines, and your financial priorities. So there's an exercise that might be a nice one to finish on that I often get people to do if they're getting started with getting financially engaged. I call it the snowball spending method. At the end of the month, you go back through all of your transactions, highlight anything that was a choice. Obviously, unfortunately, we don't have a choice about paying rent or mortgage or school fees or whatever it is. But highlight anything that you made a choice over, total that up, and consider that your opportunity number for the next month. What are you going to do with that opportunity? That right there is opportunity, because you can change those decisions if you had a choice over them. And it might be that you deploy them into something else that you think, I can't afford to do that because I haven't got any spare money. But you found the opportunity. Or it might be that you go, oh, I'm going to put half of that opportunity number into my savings or towards that emergency expense that I thought I couldn't afford. And then the next month you do it again, and there's your opportunity number. And the goal is to just gradually over time, that iterative budgeting process, optimize, 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 until you get to a point where your spending and saving behavior feels much more aligned to what you value and what your priorities are.
I feel like I'm going to be doing that for the month of December and January, what those opportunity expenses are. But all right, so I think there's plenty there. We talked about financial psychology. We talked about reprogramming your spending habit. The danger of buy now, pay later. I mean, it's interesting to see your perspective on that. So we hope that we can have you back for another episode. But once again, Emma, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. So if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, please give us a wonderful rating on Spotify or on Apple. We do love to hear from you. So if you have any questions, do let us know on podcast@moneymag.com.au. And Emma's been kind enough to give us 5 books to give away. It's her new book, Good with Money, Reprogram Your Spending Habits and Take Control of Your Money. So if you'd like a copy of her new book, please check out our show notes for more details. I'm Michelle Baltazar here at Friends with Money. That's it for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.